Good morning, everyone. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. This is the Sports Psychology Hour, and as you know, I'm here every week. We talk about the mental side of sports on this show. I've been on the radio in Kansas City for 28 years, the last 18 years here at Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City from our flagship station. Our show's now on around the country, and we're up to 12 cities now and growing, and I'm really excited about that because, you know, this show is about you. It's about coaches, it's about administrators, it's about parents, it's about officials, but it's about sports, and it's about the mental side of sports. And we delve into all kinds of issues on this show pertaining to mindsets and confidence and attitude, but most importantly about relationships. You know, one of the things that I've known in my 38 years of work as a sports psychologist is that the topic of sportsmanship is something that's become more and more important to me and something I've become more of an advocate for, I think, more than ever now. Because of all the craziness you keep hearing about in youth sports. It's not everywhere, but they're isolated incidents that happen all the time. And for years, I wanted to have an administrator on this show, somebody who works with a sports organization who can talk to us about what's going on, what's changed, and how it's good or bad. And today, we're privileged to have Jeff Chalk with us. And he is the executive director of 3-2 Baseball of Johnson County in Kansas City. And has been doing it for over 30 years. And I've known of Jeff for years, never met him before. He was there when my oldest son played back, my gosh, how many years, 17, 18 years ago. So he's been around a long time like I have. And he's seen the changes that have gone on in sports. So, Jeff, thanks for coming in this morning. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here, Dr. Jacobs.
You know, I've wanted to talk with someone who runs a sports organization for a long time to find out exactly what it is you do and how you deal with all these parents and coaches and athletes, and you run a large organization. How many teams do you have playing in 3-2?
We've got about 500 spring and summer league teams, and count on top of that about 2,500 teams participating in tournaments on weekends throughout the year, and then add another couple of hundred teams in fall ball as we go through August through October.
That is enormous.
Yeah.
How do you deal with all that?
There's a lot. Fortunately, we've got a lot of great people that help us take care of all the tasks and take care of all the people and make sure things are where they're supposed to be. It is really it's a labor of love for a lot of us. A lot of us have been out there for a good long time and have grew up through the program, and so it's near and dear to our heart.
You know, sportsmanship to me, if for those people who listen to the show, they know it's close to my heart. It's something I talk about all the time. A couple of weeks ago, I had a soccer coach on from New York who, in the handshake line after the game, a young man punched a kid on his team at a 13-year-old game. A kid in the other line punched the kid on his team. He then grabbed that kid, and then he got attacked by parents. He got broken up by the police. That was the same weekend the incident happened out in Denver, Colorado, at the 7-year-old baseball game that I know you know about. What these things don't happen everywhere. They don't happen all the time, but they do happen. I know you've had a couple situations that have happened at your area in your organization at the stadiums out there. Why is this going on? Why do these things happen?
I think that just the overall over the years, the competitive nature of society has really ramped up over the last 30 years, easily over the last 30 years. And I would say probably over the last 10 to 15 years, it's really kind of gotten there. I just think there's a higher the intensity level is just so high to the point where people are putting more and more importance and more emphasis on winning. Than really what needs to be for youth sports. Again, we play more than 10,000 games a year at 3-2. That's a lot of games. That's a lot of people. More than 500 to 600,000 people are coming through our gates every year, and there is a very small percentage of folks that are the ones that are the problem causers, or very few incidents that we really even need to address. So while we've seen the video of the Denver situation, we just heard this story about the kid getting punched in the handshake line. There are so few of those kinds of incidents, but those do get a good deal of attention, as well they should, so that we can all be more aware of how we should be acting when we're going out to enjoy our kids' games.
Tell us about your role as the executive director of a large organization like this with thousands of games and kids and parents and umpires, which we'll get into umpires here in a little bit. Tell us about your role there.
Well, my role is simply for general oversight of the organization and general planning for the league and financial. We've got some great folks that that lead our leagues and do the scheduling and handle the umpires and whatnot. So it's just general direction and working with our board to set policy and direction for the organization.
You've got teams that come in for tournaments from all over the place. You have teams that play there on a regular basis. How do you go about administering situations that get out of control? What's the policy? What do you do? I mean, do you have a specific policy in place with umpires and officials? I mean, how does that work?
Well, we've got, you know, when things get out, you don't need a policy for when there's nothing going on. But you just need to act and be very aware of the circumstances that are going on the field. We've got every night, we've got umpire supervisors and field managers that are watching over all the games. And when we see things start to maybe ramp up on a given field, we start to go focus a little more attention there. Whenever there is circumstances, our umpires or somebody on the opposing team, we can say, hey, go get help in the office, and we'll come down and help administer any problems or go work through any rule situations or deal with any kind of sportsmanship issues. And so if we see things starting to flare up a little bit, we can go on and say, hey, guys, we don't need to go there. We got this covered. It's going to be all right.
And give us an example of that, of where a situation starts, as you say, quote unquote, flare up.
Well, I remember yesterday this past weekend, we were working on the state tournament, and this was a third grade game where some plays, I mean, everybody's excited. It's the state tournament. It's getting hot. And umpires were making some calls that the fans didn't appreciate. So and it's right outside the field manager's office at the East Complex, so we can obviously see what's going on here. So as things were developing, the umpire supervisor was walking that direction towards the field and was addressing some dads on both sides that were getting a little hot and starting to yell a little bit. Hey, we've got this. I'm going to talk with our umpire, see what the call was, see what they've got.
Do they call time and come out there? What do they do?
Yeah, they'll call time whenever there's a play on the field that we need to clarify or there's some questions. We'll call time. The umpire supervisor will come up and talk specifically with the two umpires to figure out what they've got, try to understand what they saw, and then we can bring in both of the coaches at that time and say, hey, this is what our guy saw, this is what our call is, and then we're going to go play ball from there. And so a lot of times there's some confusion as to what the application of the rule, the understanding of the rule, and then when we get everybody settled down, you know, it goes a lot better.
And that worked out okay?
Yeah, it worked out fine. Yeah.
Because the people start to realize they were getting a little bit out of control, and they got to calm themselves
down.
And
there was somebody there quickly to address the situation, yes.
So you guys are on top of that. How many fields do you have? I know you have two complexes. How many fields do you have?
Yeah, we've got 9 fields at our East Complex and then 18 fields at our West Complex. So we've got guys in golf carts. We've got guys positioned in different places of the complex so we can try to get to any given field quickly.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. This is the Sports Psychology Hour. And today, I'm lucky to have Jeff Chalk with me today in studio. He is the executive director of the 3-2 baseball organization of Johnson County. He's in charge of the whole organization, what goes on. We're talking about mindsets and attitudes, sportsmanship. And we're going to come back in our next segment. We're going to talk about umpires. And we're going to talk about training umpires. And one of the issues that goes on today is a lot of kids don't want to umpire anymore because of the abuse they've gotten. So we're going to talk with him about that when we come back from our break. Hello again, everyone. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. This is the Sports Psychology Hour from our flagship station, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. Today, I'm privileged to have in studio with me Jeff Chalk. He's the executive director of the 3-2 baseball organization in Johnson County, Kansas. They have thousands of kids play baseball throughout the season, spring, summer, and fall at their organization. They have tournaments that go on. They have leagues that go on. And I've always wanted to have an administrator in here to talk with him or her about how they do what they do. So I want to get into umpires, Jeff. Okay. Every game has to have an umpire. And actually, do they just have one or two? How many?
We got two.
Okay.
Two per game.
Got two umpires. What's the minimum age that an umpire needs to be for your organization?
At Johnson County 3-2, we want to start those kids no younger than current eighth graders or 14 years old. There's a, you know, there might be a, some kids that have excelled in their growth and they're larger and they may be more mature, but we generally like to hit with the 14-year-old kids that are in eighth grade or moving into high school.
Okay. How do we train an umpire to officiate a youth sports baseball game?
Well, we've got this is a topic that I'm pretty excited about because we've got some training that goes on that we do three training sessions a year for our guys and to bring in new umpires. And we do one in late winter. We'll do one in May when the high school sports season is down, and then kids in high school figure out, hey, I got to figure out something I got to do this summer. And umpiring is a great opportunity for those kids to get involved in the sport and learn some skills.
And make a little extra money.
And then we'll do it again in August, right before school gets going again as we get into the fall season. Summer's over. Guys, their seasons are over perhaps, and now they want to stay involved in the game. We'll go through three training sessions a year.
Let me interject.
Yeah.
It just boys? Do you have any girls on?
Oh, no. We've had several young ladies be a part of that and have current female umpires at 3-2.
Great.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
So anyway, we have in our training sessions, in February and May of this year, we had more than 70 people attend those training sessions each. So we brought in about 100. So far this year, we've had over 140 people attend that training. It's a three-day classroom training, three evenings of classroom training. And then our fourth day, we go out on the field and work on positioning, making calls, the physical part of moving around on the field and being aware of where the play is going to take you and where the next play could be, and working in tandem with your partner to make sure you've got the field movements where you need to be.
Do any kids flunk out?
I wouldn't say any kids flunk out. I would say kids that once they figure out what all is involved, they decide that this isn't what we want to do. We've kind of put a little bit of a challenge to them this year too, that we want them to work at least 25 games because the learning curve is very steep. I mean, you're coming from a player, being a player and transitioning into an umpire isn't just a snap of your fingers. There's a lot to learn there, and we don't want the kids to quit on themselves before they give themselves a good chance to get in and learn and go through both good situations and maybe some rougher situations to come out on the other end to say, yeah, this is something I do want to continue to do, or, you know, maybe this I'm not cut out to do this. And they need to discover that just as much as we do.
What's the typical determining factor when a young lady or young man decides that this isn't for me? What do you think it typically is?
I think without a doubt the amount of feedback that they get from coaches and parents right from the get-go is something that they can either handle or that they can't handle.
My show a week ago was all about respect, and I talked about the importance of respect in sports and that we've lost a lot of respect in light of some situations that have been going on lately. I see with a lot of young kids who are, you know, they want to make some extra money. They love the game. They want to be
mm-hmm.
out there.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to deal with overbearing, very demonstrative parents and coaches. How do you train them? What do you say to them in the training to deal with that? Because let's say you've got a 14-year-old boy out there who maybe is 5 feet tall and weighs about 110 pounds,
mm-hmm.
and you've got a 250-pound coach who is 6'4" and loud and screaming and challenging them on every call, that can be pretty darn intimidating.
That's very intimidating, and we tell them that it is going to happen. That you and your partner are a team, that you need to work together. But the best thing that you can do is to go out and you can sell yourself by the way that you look, on how you dress. Do you look the part? Do you act confident? And are you loud and demonstrative with your calls? Because it's just like, if you're a prey, and if you show weakness and if you show timidity, those predators are going to come and get you a lot easier than if you were more confident. And so exuding confidence, being demonstrative with your calls can really go a long way to that. So the inevitable is going to happen, and you're going to get some chirping from the coaches
and the parents.
And so what we ask is that when a coach wants to come out and talk, that the head coach comes out and he can address me or the umpire in a polite manner, and we can talk about why we made the call that we made. And if there's any discussion about that, go on. But then, hey, we've had our say. You've had your say. I've had mine. Let's go back to the dugout and let's play ball.
So what if you have a coach who is not happy with that and then continues to chirp and yell, and then the parents jump in, and then
right.
the whole thing starts coming on, and you've got a 14-year-old, 15-year-old out there who's starting to freak out because, my gosh, everybody's yelling at me.
Well, by that time, we should have been paying attention to make sure that we get our umpire supervisor meaning our game management staff, our field managers, are on their umpire supervisors that are on staff at the time and monitoring all of the games. And by the time when things start to get ramping up, we need to be heading that direction to make sure we're going to interject and try to calm everybody down and get everybody back in place.
Now, you just had a situation that just happened last week with an umpire, right, where he ended up having a panic attack.
We did.
If you could share what happened there with us and what you guys did about it.
Yeah, this young umpire, and I'm so very proud of him because the way that he bounced right back from those circumstances, he was getting chirped at for two consecutive games by a team, and he had less than 20. He's got less than 20 games under his belt at this point. So this is all kind of brand new to him. So he's learning how to handle some of that pressure. He's learning how to make his calls. But anyway, the constant chirping kind of got on him, and he decided to, I'm going to sit down right here, and had a panic attack. We got our staff out there, and the opposing coach that wasn't doing all the chirping ushered him off the field into the field manager's office,
helped him
out, got him into a cool place where we could talk and kind of get him to relax a little bit. But it was interesting enough that the guys that were doing the chirping didn't check on his welfare, didn't care.
Of course not.
Didn't call and apologize, didn't come to his aid, nor did any of the parents. And so that was very disappointing.
So what happened? What do you do about them?
Well, after doing a little bit more research on the team and hearing more from our staff about the pervasiveness of this team over weekends and weekends of playing tournaments at 3-2, I called them last week and said, "Hey, I think we probably ought to take a hiatus on coming to play at 3-2 for a while. We'll see how things look in a year."
How do they react to that?
They understood and said while they've enjoyed playing at 3-2 for this year, he understood the circumstances and
was there an apology? Did he make an apology?
Yeah, he did make an apology. He said, "Yeah, I know I probably got overbearing at that point in time," and he apologized to me, but that we've got a 16-year-old kid that quite frankly, that 16-year-old kid, when I called him up the day after, was more interested in the welfare of the kids being able to play baseball than what was going to happen to
the coach. Well, that's the type
coach.
Of kid you want to have.
Absolutely.
For you.
Great
I'm
kid.
Sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. Joining me today in studio is Jeff Chalk, the executive director of Johnson County 3-2 Baseball Organization. We're talking about his role as an administrator. We're talking about sportsmanship. We're on the Leader in Sports, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hello again, everyone. I am sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I'm from our flagship station, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. This is the Sports Psychology Hour. We're having a great show this morning. Joining me is Jeff Chalk. He's the executive director of the 3-2 baseball organization in Johnson County. He's in charge of thousands of kids, thousands of games, and it's pretty incredible what he does. And we've been talking about umpires, and he just shared the story of a young umpire who had a panic attack at a game last week because of the verbal abuse he was getting from the coach and some parents on the other team. And Jeff mentioned at the end of our last segment that this team has now been banned from playing here. Are they from this area, or are they from somewhere else?
They're from the greater Kansas City area, yes.
Okay, uh-huh. So you said the coach the next day when you spoke to him was a little bit remorseful because he maybe realized, after a little bit of time away, hey, maybe we overdid it. So let me throw this out at you, Jeff, because it's something I've talked about a lot. I feel very strongly when you have a coach or a parent who goes over the edge, and sounds like this guy did. You've now banned them for a year from coming back. I believe very strongly that what you need to do with these people is say, you know what, you can come back in a year, but there's going to be one precondition. You now need to take an umpiring class, and you need to umpire for one season to see what it's like to be in the person's shoes you were abusing. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's a great idea, and that's actually happened. We've had guys in the past that, you know, sometimes it's kind of fun to put the fox in charge of the hen house. And we have had guys that over their careers were kind of rough coaches, but when their kids got through eighth grade or they've moved into high school, their kids no longer playing, they came back and were umpires and have said, wow, it's a whole lot different seeing the game from this side, and I wish I would have done things maybe a little bit differently when I was on the other side of the ball than from being an umpire. So the idea of putting in that kind of a requirement, I think, would go a long way to curbing the sportsmanship issues that we have, not to mention the lack of umpires that we have that everybody around the country is struggling
with. Well, that's part of one of the things I wanted to get at. There's a real, especially in youth soccer, which has exploded in the last 15 years in this country, there is a real need for more officials, referees, sideline refs, game refs. And I know a lot of kids have quit because of the abuse they get from parents. And I've seen it. I've talked about it on my show forever. I've seen too much of this stuff. So do you think that's something you can implement and just say, from now on, we're going to have a program where if you you have to define exactly what the abuse
sure,
is.
Sure.
But and even for parents and also for parents. See, I know there's a youth sport organization that says if you kick the parent out, you kick the kid out. I don't agree with that. I think you kick the parent out. I don't think the child should suffer because of the parent's stupidity.
Well, we've had that circumstance happen in a high school level game. Quite frankly, up on at our West Complex, there's a road that runs right by two high school fields. There was some rowdiness going on a game, and our guys stopped the game, got everybody to their dugouts, excused the parents from the game.
You're talking about the umpires.
I'm talking about the umpires. Stopped the game, ran all the parents out of the field, off the complex. You guys can go watch the game from the other side of the street.
How did that actually happen? Because I can see a lot of parents saying, screw you, you're not kicking me out of here.
Then the game's over, and everybody goes home. Game's over right now. We kind of call that the nuclear option.
So you have implemented that.
Absolutely.
Before.
Absolutely. And the kids finish the game.
And they're probably a lot happier.
They're a lot happier because
they're not listening to all that stuff in the background.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the thing that I don't think a lot of parents realize is they've got to yell and scream and all this. The impact it has on their kids. First of all, it puts a lot of pressure on kids because they feel they have to please their parents. Second, they start to feel like they've got to please their coaches and their teammates. And they're also embarrassed because their dad is screaming and mm-hmm. everybody hears him and he's yelling at me. Right?
Right. Yeah. Another little thing to think about, too, is, and we've got some signs at the complex when you walk in that says, there are multiple roles that you can play today. You can either be the umpire, you can be the coach, you can be the player, or you can be the spectator. You're going to pick one of those today, and you need to do that to the best of your ability. If you're going to be the spectator, you can't also be the coach, you can't also be the umpire. So be the spectator.
Well, in our book, Just Let Him Play, Guiding Parents, Coaches, and Athletes to Youth Sports, that I co-wrote with Pete Malone, who's in the Hall of Fame of Swimming, and Jeff Montgomery, the Kansas City Royals all-time leading closer, we have something in there called the athletic box. And there are three arrows that all point to the athlete, from the officials, from the parents, and from the coaches. Everything affects the kids. And one of the things we talk about is let the parents parent, let the mm-hmm. coaches coach, mm-hmm. let the officials officiate, let the kids play.
Right.
But unfortunately, we've got this whole issue, and I've talked about this in this show forever. We've got this sports specialization stuff now where kids are just playing one sport at age 5 and 6, mm-hmm. which to me is absurd. Mm-hmm. You're having all these sports injuries now from recurring use. And kids, I know orthopedic surgeons are doing Tommy John surgery on kids who are 12.
Yeah.
Because they've been, just pitching, throwing curveballs, and they're throwing out their elbow. So, right, you've heard of this, I'm sure.
Yes.
So let me ask you. So we've got this issue with the umpires. You're training them. You're trying to get them to deal with this stuff. You've got out-of-control coaches and out-of-control parents once in a while. Not often, but once in a while. You have a rule in terms of what's to be done. What's maybe one of the worst situations you in your 30 years plus of being out here that you've had to deal with?
Oh, gosh. I'd have to say, and I tell this story every year, we run a scores classes for parents to help be a scoring score for their teams. And we have a pitch count in our league play that we have to – everybody's limited on the number of pitches that they can throw. We're in the playoffs, and because two parents would not talk, the scorers from both teams would not talk, there was some kind of animosity
– between each other.
Between the teams and the two scorers.
How old were these kids?
These kids were, I'd say, fourth or fifth grade, and it was in the season-ending playoffs.
So 10 or 11 years of age.
Yeah. And the team that was winning had overpitched a kid, had overextended, because had there been communication between the two scorers, we would have known how many pitches there were being thrown, and we would have avoided that overextension. So when we overextend a pitcher, that's an automatic forfeit, and all heck breaks loose. So the losing team ends up winning and advancing to the playoffs. We had to dismiss one team at a time into the parking lot and allow them to exit the facility before we would let the next team leave. I understood that as people were leaving and heading down the street, that there was still stuff going on down the street as families were leaving. Yeah, so it's, you know, but again, that occurred more than 10 years ago. But it's a good story that I tell folks to come in about communication, perspective, and making sure that we're all in this together. Because you and I are going to play against each other, and I want to build a great relationship with my opponents so that we're enjoying this youth sports experience from the time we're kindergarten all the way through high school. However long our kids enjoy playing, I want to enjoy that experience as well. Because it's for the kids, but it's not just for the kids. We're spending a large portion of our lives in the gyms, on the fields, on the courts, with everybody. And everybody's in this together. And there's no reason not to enjoy that experience, regardless of what role you play.
How important do you feel, and we'll talk about this more throughout the rest of the show, the whole importance of winning has become now? I feel we're seeing this competitive nature with kids going down to, like I said, first and second grade, to the point that it's out of control. I don't think winning, to me, our book is called Just Let Them Play, not Just Let Them Win, mm-hmm. for a reason.
Right.
Because I think play is gone from our society with kids. Everything's structured and organized. You don't see kids going by, you don't drive by a grade school, rarely. Rarely do you drive by a grade school and see a bunch of kids out there playing without being at an organized practice, right?
Right, right.
Why do you think that is?
I just think society in general has gotten more competitive all across the board, and that's trickled down to our youth sports arena. There are still a lot of guys, a lot of families, a lot of kids that get the big picture that youth sports is just a fun environment, a fun outlet to enjoy family time, quite frankly, but the winning is a very important thing. And we're somehow, you know, one of the things that I say in our preseason managers meetings as well is that your youth baseball league record is not going to end up on your tombstone. So let's not get too into it too hard here.
I'd like to quote you on that one. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. My guest today is Jeff Chalk, the executive director of 3-2 Baseball Johnson County. We're having a great interview today. We're on the Leader in Sports, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Everyone, I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. This is the Sports Psychology Hour from our flagship station, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm having a great interview today. Joining me in studio is Jeff Chalk. He's the executive director of the 3-2 baseball organization here in Johnson County, Kansas. He administrates an incredibly large number of games, tournaments, kids, umpires, parents. He's in charge of all the whole deal. And I've always wanted to have somebody like him in studio with me talking, and this has been a really fabulous interview because, you know, if your kids play sports in some kind of a league, some kind of an organization that's got to be run by somebody, and that person's got to know what they're doing, which obviously you do because you've been doing it for 30-plus years, and you're going to deal with all kinds of weird people in this business. You're smiling as I'm saying that. There are a lot of great people and a lot of very bizarre people. I want to get into the one of my passions is sportsmanship and youth sports and having fun. And you said something earlier, you know, no one's tombstone is going to say what the score of a certain game was. Sports is supposed to be about having fun for kids. And to me, I don't even think score should be important until you're probably in seventh or eighth grade. Score, I mean, yeah, you're going to keep score and you play a baseball game. I get that. But to me, it should be irrelevant until you're about 13, 14. That, to me, is when specialization should, you know, if you want to specialize in something, that's the time to start to do it. And I've read a number of articles in the last few months about some of the great athletes of modern time. Roger Federer, he played everything till he was about 14 is when he started playing tennis. Alex Morgan played a bunch of things. At age 14, she started to specialize in soccer. Lorenzo Cain, one of the Royals' heroes in the World Series, didn't even play baseball till he was 14. So I think a lot of these parents who think, I've got to get my kid involved at 7 and 8, and we've got to go to all these clinics and train year-round, and it's just going to be this one sport. You know, the kids are going to do what the parents say, and of course the kids will be excited. But after a while, there's going to be that loss of interest. There's going to be that burnout factor. What's your opinion on that?
I totally agree that I think kids should be playing as many different sports as they can as they want to. I think specialization needs to be ratcheted back as far as we can take it. I mean, the opportunity for, like you say, for a Lorenzo Cain that didn't even, you know, start till he was 14 years old, for crying out loud. Because what you do in another sport can certainly enhance what you do in every other sport. The skills that you learn, the speed, the strength that you develop can enhance you across the board in all those. So while we offer baseball almost year-round at 3 and 2, we recognize that there needs to be diversification amongst your activities and amongst the activities that you're involved in. For those that want to do baseball, we're here for you. But we certainly would encourage, particularly for those of you that are pitchers, you know, let's lay off in the off season for that last quarter of the year. Let's stay out of that and recover so that we're not, as you pointed out earlier about the Tommy John surgeries going on for young kids. We need to cut that down, and diversification would probably help that quite a bit.
So sportsmanship, what do you guys do to promote it, to teach it? Do you have clinics for people to come? If you do, who comes to them? Do you require it? What's your whole philosophy on all that?
Yeah, we do. We do emphasize sportsmanship heavily at 3 and 2 from all of our preseason meetings with our coaches. We even have an annual sportsmanship awards banquet where we honor 5 or 6 teams at each of the each of the grade levels, all the way through with a banquet and a large traveling trophy with their name on it. It is the biggest award of the year, and we're not inviting the guys to that banquet who won their league. We're not inviting the guys that won X, Y, or Z tournament to that banquet. We're recognizing and appreciating the people that are doing it right, from the coaches to the players to the parents, all in a package that recognize the importance of sportsmanship and are exuding that and are being an example to everybody else in our league.
That's awesome, Jeff. That's awesome. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who appreciate that.
Absolutely, there are.
Do you feel we need to have mandatory sportsmanship seminars for coaches and or parents? I know most I have always emphasized for a coach to have a preseason meeting that's a requirement for parents to attend, at least one parent. You know, obviously it'd be great if both came. But have a preseason meeting where you discuss the season, you discuss your goals, you discuss, you know, practice times, practice requirements, who plays, who doesn't. That way you give parents an opportunity to ask whatever question they want and get an understanding. You know, can I talk to you after a game? No. Or when can I talk to you? What's the best way to approach it? All those types of things. Do you see that as something that a lot of coaches do, or do you see a lot of them maybe blowing that off and say, I don't need to do that?
I think most coaches do exactly that, and we emphasize that in our preseason meetings, that communication is key to a successful season. And I'm not talking about your wins and your losses. I'm talking about having a good team camaraderie. And it's really rewarding these days when you hear guys that are in the 13, 14s, or even the high schools, where they've been together with a team. Now they've held their team together for all of those years, and you know, people are going to move in and move out, but they've been able to hold their group together for so long. That is a really rich rich experience for all of those families. As it relates to a sportsmanship training program and making it mandatory, I'd like to be able to do that, but making things mandatory oftentimes doesn't work.
Because I figured you'd probably say something like that.
Yeah, the guys that are going to go to that, or the people that go to those kinds of meetings.
Let me guess, they're the ones that need to be there, and the ones that need to be there, they will not show up at all, even if you paid them.
Yeah, the ones that need to be there are not the ones that need it.
I guess as we wrap things up here, what do we do about that? Because those are the guys, or men and women, who, I mean, there are some wacky moms out there. You and I both know that just as much as there are some wacky guys. And so what do we do about those people? I mean, do you think you have the program in place to deal with that that's best, or do you think there's something you could change in terms of that?
We've actually started working that. We've got a sportsmanship committee and have for decades at 3 and 2 that observe and help fill in. When we get a guy that gets off the rails a little bit, we call him up. We have a meeting with him and say, hey, you know, we can be a good example here and lay out some of those ideas or ideals for their team to follow. I think sometimes that you've got to get to the bottom before you can come back up again too. In this, and when people have hit bottom with their sportsmanship, I think they've seen that things can be taken away from them. They're no longer allowed to come to the park. They're no longer going to be able to watch their kids play. And with those kinds of things in front of them, maybe they can turn things around and improve.
Can you share, as we wrap things up here today, can you share a story with us of maybe somebody, a mom or dad, who was abusive, was verbally abusive, maybe went over the edge and then realized that down the road, you know, you maybe said you can't come back, and maybe they did make some changes and they were able to correct things?
I've got one guy that comes to mind probably 15, 20 years ago that was constantly complaining about a lot of things, and he would constantly ride the umpires and constantly complain about this, that, or the other. Was a great guy off the field, but once you got him onto the field, his intensity level just went through the roof and whatnot. And it was one day when he called in and wanted to talk about something and complain about something, and I just kind of stopped him in midstream and said, hey, you know, quite frankly, people think that you are a certain way. And I used a disparaging name, and he was silent for a little
bit.
Thanks
for not sharing it today.
Yes, sir. He was silent for a little bit, and he kind of took a deep breath. He says, "Wow, that's really hard to hear, very humbling. But thank you for saying that, because I can't see myself. I'm not doing this in front of a mirror, and it takes all of us to come around and make sure that we're all toeing the line and raising the bar on what the expectations are."
Do you think you guys can invest in Tootsie Pops? I think. I've shared this forever on this show. I tell parents or coaches, come to a game, bring a bag of lollipops or Tootsie Pops, and hand them out to the parents and say, suck on this.
Uh-huh.
And it works. It works. What do you think about that?
I think that's a terrific idea. I think I might go grab some on the way home and do it tomorrow night.
You know, I mean, you've probably got a team tomorrow night. I'm guessing you might be thinking about that, maybe a little out of control once in a while. So that'd be a perfect situation to go up to the parents more so than the coach.
Right on. I think when we start to see some wild things like that, that'd be a fun way to introduce some calm and maybe some perspective
Jeff,
to that group.
Jeff Chalk, I want to thank you so much for coming in today. This has been a fascinating interview. If people want to reach you, how can they get a hold of you?
We're available at 3&2 Baseball at 3and2baseball.com, or call us at the office, 913-888-8055.
Thank you so much for coming in. This has been a great, great interview, great discussion today. I want to thank you and come back again.
Thanks, Dr. Jacobs.